What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. Once again, we got friend of the program, maybe going to be a rotating guest coming in here on one of these days, our guy, the Golden State Warrior assassin himself. No, I'm not talking about Jordan Poole. I'm talking about Mr. Adler. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
Man, they call me the babyface assassin of podcasting. I'm just here to fill in and do my job. You know what I mean? Clock in, clock out, get the work done. But we got a lot to talk about, man. We got a lot to talk about. There's a big series that just had a game last night.
We do. And I just want to let everybody know we are recording this on a Tuesday night. As of right now, it is the fourth quarter of Philly and Boston. Philly is up 104-89 with about 5 minutes and 23 seconds left. So I just want to let everybody know, but we are dedicating this podcast to Golden State and the Lakers. I believe that game is being played on Wednesday, so this could be the last preview that we talk about of this game and kind of get Adler's thoughts. So Adler, I will cede the floor to you, man. You're down 3-1. How are we feeling?
I'm feeling like, man, I don't want to sit here and say the dynasty is over. That's not the case, but it is hard. It is hard to stay positive after what we saw in game one and game four. Games two and three, you know, each team, they get a blowout. It's going to happen. I'm not super paranoid about that, but these really close games, these gimme games, these back and forth, and you know, either team has a chance at the end. Those are the games that historically during this run, the Warriors snag. Those are the games that Curry takes over. Those are the games that, you know, we always end up pulling out of our ass. And the next day, you know, this is the Dubs magic. This is Warriors magic. And the fact that LA took both of those games is extremely concerning, because if we're not going to get those, especially game one at home, the way we lost that one, if we're not going to get those, how in the hell do we expect to go, you know, three in a row here? And I'm looking at it and I'm trying to figure out, like, hey, what's the difference between this year and last year? What's the difference between this regular season and the playoffs? You know, what's the deciding factor here? And I'm not going to get super stat heavy here. If you want some super stat heavy thing, go listen to Low Post, you know, go listen to one of those, you know, NBA nerd, blah, blah, blahs. But if you want to go off emotion and if you want to go off of like what just the eye test and what we're seeing, I'm not going to be breaking any news here. We are seeing Jordan Poole fail on the national stage.
Wow.
That is what we're seeing. And, you know, you can look. I've got NBA references pulled up. Again, not going to get stat heavy, but if you want to talk about it, I did a little research before the pod. Steph Curry playoffs last year versus this year, almost the same. If anything, he scored slightly more than before. Percentages are the same. Three-point percentage is the same. Assists are the same. Everything is pretty much kosher. Klay Thompson performing slightly better than he did last year during the playoff run. Kevon Looney is leading the Warriors in win shares in this playoffs right now, over Steph Curry. Kevon Looney with an 8.7 win share. So he's exceeding expectations. Draymond shooting slightly worse than last year. Same amount of field goals, one more field goal attempt. Everything else is the same. If anything, he's actually even added about 1.5 more assists per game. So you can't say Draymond's the issue. Klay's not the issue. Steph's not the issue. Kevon's not the issue. Then you look at Jordan Poole. And I'm not even going to compare Jordan Poole from this year to last year, because Jordan Poole had a good regular season. People like to shit on him for the regular season he had because he had some struggles coming off the bench. But when you look at his overall numbers, he had a decent regular season. He had the regular season that I would have expected him to take after the one he had last year. You know, a little bit of a step up. You know, he's got paid. He's got his extension. Obviously, there was a Draymond incident in the beginning of the year, but that didn't really seem to negatively affect him, at least in terms of his stat line. And then you look at the playoffs, and I swear he better have a bad angle, because there is nothing else that can justify the drop-off he has. Points cut in half compared to the regular season. Three-point percentage, I think it's down about, I think he was right around 37% the regular season, around 33% now, something like that. Two-point percentage, he's down to 39%, something terrible. He's dropped off on all facets. In the playoffs last year, he was shooting 50% from two, and he was shooting 39% from three. He's not doing that this year. He is turning the ball over. He's not getting assists. He's making boneheaded plays. And the thing with Jordan, when he's performing up to his standards, he is the secondary playmaker that the Warriors have craved ever since they got Steph Curry. And the problem with that is when he's not that elite secondary playmaker that we paid him to be, he does nothing else. He is not getting loose rebounds. He is not going for 50-50 balls. He is not making good decisions on help defense. He's not making good decisions on one-on-one defense. He is lazy. He lets guys blow past him. He fouls constantly. I am sitting here and I am saying that I am abhorred by Jordan Poole's performance. Get Jordan Poole off this team.
Okay, wow. Okay, this is as negative as you've been since you've been on this podcast. And this is honestly probably as negative as you've been since I know you. And I understand why. You won 4 titles in 8 years. You've been to a lot of NBA finals. I get it. But let's just focus on last night's game, okay? So I know Jordan Poole wasn't great. He played 10 minutes, literally had 0 points. He was 0 for 4. I know that some of his post-game stuff after the game, some Warrior fans didn't like that. Again, completely understand why. Steph Curry was fantastic last night. I don't care what anybody says. I know he shot 12 of 30, 3 for 14, but the dude was unbelievable. The game was at such a slow pace for him. I mean, it was a fast-paced game, but he was in such control. Like, it was truly, truly impressive to watch, and nobody else on his team outside of probably Andrew Wiggins was doing anything. I know Gary Payton had 15 points, but a lot of those were on those high screen pick and rolls that they were doing to get Anthony Davis kind of away from the paint. Klay Thompson, man, seems to be escaping some wrath from this game, man. He was 3 for 11, had 9 points, played 41 minutes. I know it seemed like from that game 2 adjustment that Steve Kerr made with starting JaMychal Green, he played very, very well. Last night he only played 2 minutes. So I understand the Jordan Poole situation, and I saw Draymond's comments after the game on his own podcast, shout out to Draymond, where he kind of said, hey, man, Lonnie Walker Jr., if he's going to do that, you just got to tip your hat. They're going to beat us. I thought it was a good look by Steph at the end of the game. I know it went in and out against Anthony Davis. But like, I get the Jordan Poole frustration. I think it's real. I think it's valid. I'm certainly not giving him a pass. But, you know, just if we're just focusing on the game last night, man, some of these other dudes got to step up, don't you think?
No, and this is why I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Because those other guys are still doing other things beyond what their specialty is. Klay still gives effort on defense. He still gives effort. You know, he still tries to make plays. Klay makes some bad decisions. I'm not gonna disagree with that. And it's one of those things where you take the good with the bad with Klay in a way that you don't do that with normal volume shooters or normal streaky, you know, 3-point snipers. Klay, look, I've just pulled this up here. Klay's playoffs this year versus last year. Same amount of points, same amount of 3-point attempts, same amount of rebounds, same amount of assists, same free throw percentage, same 3-point percentage, same 2-point percentage. Klay is doing nothing different than what he normally does on a year-to-year basis when he's healthy. So I can sit here and I can nitpick a couple of the poor decisions. Like, yeah, he shot that, you know, three-pointer fading to his left with like 5 seconds left on the shot clock last night.
Shot that he hits, though.
It's a shot that he hits, and he even said in the postgame, hey, I wish I had some more time on that. I rushed it. And you know what? If I'm going to lose because Klay rushed that shot, while it's frustrating, I take that. Jordan Poole has not built that equity with us. Everyone wants to say, hey, he helped us win a championship last year. And that's true. That's true. But how many minutes did he get in the finals last year against Boston? 17? How many did Klay get? 30? One of them is clearly helping us more than the other, and it's not purely just based off how well he shoots. I'm sorry. So, you know, I didn't like the Steph decision to go one-on-one against AD at the end. I thought he was playing.
Went in and out, though, man.
It went in and out. That's the thing. That Steph is so special and so amazing that half of the shots that he makes, I start out by going, what the fuck? Why'd you shoot that? Oh, he made it. Okay. It's the classic Kerr meme, you know, when he did that crazy shot against the Clippers. What was that, 2014, 15, or whatever? He's going to the legs, behind the back, tween, step back three. Steve Kerr sitting there with his hands on his head, like, what are you doing? And then boom, he hits it. So, again, while I can say that I don't like the decision to go one-on-one against AD at the end, play hero ball, it's justifiable. Jordan Poole's decisions are not justifiable. And here's the other thing, too. Jordan Poole, you talk about body language doctor here. Jordan Poole has some of the worst body language that I've ever seen on a player.
He's in a funk, man. He's in a funk.
And that's why I'm saying it better be an ankle injury. If we lose in a gentleman's sweep, or if we lose in game 6, or whatever the case may be, if we don't get out of this series with the Lakers, you're either going to see one of two things after the series. You're going to start seeing articles leaked about how unhealthy he actually was and no one really wanted to talk about it, or you're going to get trade rumors. Those are really the only two options here.
For Jordan Poole or a head coach that you have? Just saying.
Okay. Hold up here. Let's talk about this real quick.
Let me set the stage here so everybody knows what we're talking about, okay? All right. I think this is a pie in the sky. I don't even know if I would want it. Let's just set the stage here before you go nuts here, okay? So obviously I'm a diehard Bucks fan. You guys all know this. They got rid of their head coach, Adrian Wojnarowski, and Eric Name, who covers the Milwaukee Bucks here locally, both said that they had sources tell them that Milwaukee is potentially waiting on a coach that's still in the playoffs. Okay. I know Adler. Adler's my guy. I said, well, it's not definitely not Doc. It's definitely not Joe Mazzulla. It's definitely not Mike Malone. It's definitely not Monty Williams. Definitely not Darvin Ham, because there's no way in hell he's getting fired after the kind of turnaround job that the Lakers have done. I was just throwing it out to Adler. Wouldn't it make sense for Steve Kerr if Bob Myers is gone, if Draymond Green is gone? I'm wondering if this is the guy that the Bucks are targeting. Like I said, pie in the sky. I put it at like a 5% chance of it happening. I just wanted to set the stage there. Adler, the floor is yours.
You know, the only way that you get Steve Kerr is if we win the finals, because the trend of the NBA seems to be fire the coach that won you the finals.
Right.
So that's really your only shot here. I think it's absolutely nuts that Steve Kerr would even be brought up in this conversation. I think he is so tied to Steph that it's one of those things where until Steph leaves, I don't think Kerr leaves at all. You mentioned it couldn't be Doc. Why couldn't it be Doc? What is he have to hold on to in Philly outside of if they pull off this miraculous series win and win a finals? I mean, outside of that scenario, what's keeping him in Philly? Because Harden's going to leave.
Potentially. So maybe he doesn't stay in Philly, but I think there is a – I could be wrong. I'll raise my hand if I'm wrong. I think there's a snowball's chance in hell that he's the Bucks head coach. You can't – this has been a topic among Bucks fans for a while. Mike Budenholzer won 69% of his games. He won 69% of his games, 60% of his playoff games, and he won an NBA championship. Like, I think that I'm a little bit torn on if Milwaukee made the right decision getting rid of him, only because, like, the expectations have changed. Whoever you hire next season or for this upcoming season, if they don't win a title, it's a failure. Like, I mean, like, based on what you did, if you keep the same roster, now obviously – it's going to be tough for Milwaukee, but I do think there's some room where they can kind of change this roster. But like, if you're running it back with the same guys and you just think a head coach is going to fix that, I would have just have preferred to have Bud come back. I think the Bucks roster is a little bit flawed. I think they're probably a little bit sick of the half court offense that kind of gets bogged down in the playoffs. I think that's part of that is coaching. I think another part of it is personnel, but that, like I said, I just don't know. Honest to God, I've kind of joked with you that I would love for them to hire Chris Quinn. I don't know how realistic that is, that they would hire a assistant coach with no head coaching experience. It's just something that I would do. If people are going to get feedback, well, you can't give this veteran roster a first-year head coach. There's been five different NBA champions since 2016. Three of them were first-time head coaches. Ty Lue, Steve Kerr, Nick Nurse. Like, it can work. And two of those guys, if you're talking about Charles Lee or a Bud connection, two of those guys were the lead assistants. You had David Blatt, Ty Lue, Dwayne Casey, and Nick Nurse. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, Adler. I'm kind of just poking fun a little bit. Like, I don't think, like, trolling aside, or I don't think it's very realistic. But, like, when I heard that report, I don't know who else. I really don't know who else it could be. Doc Rivers is a worse coach than Mike Budenholzer. I can't see – especially trying to sell that to the players, to the fan base. Hey, we're going to bring in this guy who has – I like Doc. He's a Marquette guy. He's got Milwaukee ties. But we're gonna fire our coach who won 69% of his games to hire a guy who has blown – what is it? 3-1 leads? Like
– Yeah. And look, I think the one thing that you have a point
and
on.
First of all, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Adler. Let's be real. This is probably a Bill Simmons rumor. Like, this is all this is. Or some Boston homer, some kind of rumor that, oh, Doc Rivers, like, no. Like, the only reason I bring up Steve Kerr, this could be the end. Like you said, Jordan Poole might be gone. Draymond might be gone. Bob Myers might be gone. I mean, Golden State has a lot of uncertainty, too, that I don't think – well, I should say it was talked about earlier, but has been kind of pushed on the back burner.
Yeah, and look, I think the one thing that you really have going for in the point that you're making here, I still don't think Kerr is even a remote possibility, but the difference – you need someone like a Kerr. I think that's really where you're getting at with all of this, because whenever a team makes a coaching change, what they're looking for is the opposite of whatever they just experienced. And what you just experienced – did I say Kerr is like a Kerr?
Sweet. Yeah, you did.
It's been a long day, y'all. But my point being is you need someone like a Kerr. You need someone that is going to come in, Zen Master Giannis, allow them to play freely, allow them to make adjustments on the fly, because that's what you didn't have prior. Coach Bud is awesome. I'm with you on that, and I think whatever job Coach Bud gets next, he's going to be extremely
Portland,
successful.
Man, I mean, I really believe that Portland, you could take this same roster. I truly, truly believe this. You could take that same Portland roster that you have now, and Mike Budenholzer would get them into the playoffs. There's not a doubt in my mind.
And I was fucking with you a little bit earlier in the text chat here, but I'm serious when I say this. Like I can just picture this. Next year, you guys hire some assistant coach, some whatever you want to call it, some offensive savant, some NBA genius who's been a head assistant or whatever you want to call it. And there's going to be a press conference after a successful Bucks run where Giannis is going to sit there and he's going to say something along the lines of like, man, you know, it just feels so good to play freely. It feels so good to have a coach who trusts in us to make decisions out there. Or you're going to have something along that line where it's going to show a clear situation in which they are no longer restricted to be this strict style of play that they've had to adhere to since Coach Bud got there, which, like you said, brought them a lot of success, brought them a championship, the most successful coach in Bucks history. Shout out George Karl. But, like, what's going to happen is you're also going to get the lows, and you're going to get the first-round exits, and you're going to get that Game 7 against Boston last year where, because he doesn't change, they leave themselves susceptible to these massive letdowns, and that's what you're going to see. So when you're saying, I want Steve Kerr, what you're saying is, I want someone who's going to allow us to play the opposite style of what we've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes and no. Yeah, yes and no, because I believe that that Milwaukee's problem isn't just – I think it's partly Bud. I really do. But I also think that part of it is, man, Milwaukee doesn't have – and even when they won the NBA Finals, they don't have, quote-unquote, like three-point shooters. You know what I mean? Like they have shooters that can get hot and get cold, but they've never really truly surrounded Giannis with like – accurate three-point shooters that can get their shot off whenever, that actually bring it in the playoffs. I think it's a little bit more of a personnel issue than it is coaching. Like I just think that there needs to be some changes that happen. But I think though what you're saying is more so like, and we can go back to the Warriors here, where Steve Kerr is going to try, or a person like Steve Kerr is going to try different things. Like I want to kind of get your thoughts. Me, you, myself, and Mikey were talking about a little bit last night. You know, they put in Gary Payton to start, and they go completely small. And part of the reason that they want to go small is because they want to get Anthony Davis away from the basket. And they just pick and roll them to death, right? Golden State could do whatever they want. Now, you know, one of the cons of that is you're super small and Anthony Davis is going to have a field. I think he had 15 rebounds yesterday. And you kind of saw LeBron kind of attacking them, things like that. But that's kind of what I would want a head coach to do. Try something. You know, just you can't always just trust the math. You have to try something. You know, I get it, like you referenced Boston in Game 7. Well, Milwaukee didn't have any wings. Hey, this Grant Williams guy sucks at shooting threes. We're going to – if he's going to beat us, we'll tip our hat. He's going to beat us. He beat them. Jimmy Butler, you know, this series. Hey, man, maybe just try Giannis on him for a couple possessions. Maybe throw a little bit different looks at him. Maybe make a starting lineup change. Something along those lines, like that's what I think more so than anything that I want to see. I think the system is fine. I think it needs to be tweaked. I think the personnel needs to be tweaked, but there's just got to be just a little bit extra. You know what I'm saying, Adler? Just a little. When things get stale, yeah, man, I can sit here all day and say, hey, man, Giannis makes his free throws, they win. Chris Middleton plays for 8 quarters instead of 6 in games 4 and 5. Milwaukee, like, there's a lot of stuff that just didn't go Milwaukee's way if those guys play a little bit better. But I also think it was a problem that kind of got masked a little bit. And, you know, I love Bud. It was probably the right decision. I thought he was classy in what he said, like, let's go have a beer and get on the lake. But I truly believe wherever he goes next, he's going to have a ton of success.
And I just want to give a quick shout out to Bud, too. I don't want to sit here and act like I'm disrespecting him or anything like that. He's an elite, top-tier coach. It's just, again, you know, when you fail for the same reasons multiple times, you need change, especially in professional sports, especially in the NBA. So, you know, that's why I think you guys are going to go for the assistant coach route. That's why I don't think you're
going to Chris Quinn, baby, come on. Coach.
I wouldn't be surprised. Now, you did mention, you know, it's not just a Bud problem, it's a personnel problem. What do you believe? There's going to be some big top-end changes? And I'm not talking Giannis. Obviously, Giannis, you know, the trade rumors are bullshit, whatever. Let's not talk about that. That's wasted time. But is there going to be – is Drew moving? Is Brook moving on? Like, what do you think the personnel changes are outside of the bottom end and the top end? What is that middle looking like next year?
Well, I mean, it's tough, man, because the Bucks have put themselves into a corner kind of with this roster. And Milwaukee is actually facing the same issue that Golden State and the Clippers and a lot of these other teams that are going to be facing. Milwaukee, I believe, it has the third highest payroll in the NBA behind the Clippers and the Warriors. And basically, I'm not going to get into all of it because I don't understand it, but, like, there's no more repeater tax anymore. Like, the NBA basically kind of has a hard cap but doesn't have a hard cap. Like, some of the stuff, I believe, like, the mid-level exception for them is going to go away. They can't trade a guy out and get more salary back. They can't do, like, 3-for-1s if they've been in this certain apron for a while. So they're a little bit locked in. But, you know, with that being said, we heard at the trade deadline from Shams, you know, Milwaukee was very close to getting Fred VanVleet. I'm assuming that would have been Bobby Portis, Grayson Allen, maybe Pat Connaughton, you know, a combination of those players. I think that I trust the front office to kind of make amends with this and kind of maybe not go big fish hunting, but I can see little tweaks in here. I still think they got to fix the bench. I know it's tough for them to do, but they have to do that. And you just can't – I was a little turned off by them going into this season, I'll be honest, because they basically just said, well, you know, if Chris Middleton had stayed healthy, we win the title. We're also going to bring in Joe Ingles, and that's that. We're just going to run it back because we think that we're that good. And you kind of saw Boston, even though they just lost, and we're going to get into that here in the next minute or two. You know, they bring in Malcolm Brogdon, right? Somebody like, you can't just stay stale. You know what I mean? Like, you got to continue to mix it up. Like, I can't keep, man. Like, Grayson Allen is a fine player. But Grayson Allen shouldn't be playing 30 minutes on any team that is going for a championship title. In 10 to 15 minutes, he's fine. I know some are going to say, oh, well, look, Steve, he shot 48%. Yeah, dude, he also shot like 5 times a game. And there were times out there that he was a liability defensively, and there were times out there I didn't even know he was out there. Like, you can't have that. You know, like, Pat Connaughton has been up and down all season. Bobby Portis, my guy, I love him. He's fantastic in the regular season. Like, you need someone like him on your team for when Giannis misses games or Lopez misses games. But dude, he's unplayable in certain playoff matchups. It just is what it is. Like, you got to be able to rectify that. So we'll see what happens, man. I honestly have no idea. I think first, though, they got to get a coach. They got to figure out what they're going to do. I expect Lopez to be back. I expect Middleton to be back. I think if you're talking, Adler, to your point, if you're talking about like a top-end move, I would assume it'd be some sort of sign and trade with Middleton. That would be my guess. He's got a player option for $40 million he can opt into. I don't know. But I know that if Chris Middleton just left, like, that $40 million just goes away. I think they have like $3 to $4 million in cap space after that to sign somebody. So they gotta keep those guys. But we'll come back to the Warriors real quick. I just want to talk about Boston Philly. I'm surprised. I know that you probably aren't surprised. I was a little bit higher on Boston than you were, but they lose 115 and 103. Honestly, when we started this podcast, I texted you guys. I said, should we wait till the end of this game? You were like, no, dude, they're down by 20.
That was
that was 8 minutes left, I believe. this is serious, man. I mean, we got to talk about this. This is the second year in a row in the second round that Boston is down 3-2 to a team that on paper, they are much better than. I'm surprised, man. Kind of give me your thoughts. Are you surprised that Boston's in this situation? Obviously, I think all the pressure is going on Philly now because if Philly doesn't win at home in game six. But you can't knock on somebody for being up 3-2. Like that's what you want to do. You got two chances to end it. Kind of give me your thoughts real quick as this game just ended a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I mean, you said that I'm a little bit more down on Boston than you, and like, you know, whatever that may be the case. That's just more of my personal bias towards them. But yeah, I'm shocked. How are they losing to this Philly team? This Philly team should not be winning. And I mean, yeah, you can say, well, Philly's got a full roster again. They got Embiid back. But you got Embiid, who just sprained his knee, what, 2 weeks ago? Less than 2 weeks ago? He may be still be playing, but there's no way he's 100%. And you're going to sit here, you're going to go down 3-2 in that series, including a loss in game one where Embiid didn't play. And you're the defending champion, not the defending champions, but you're the defending runner-up. And like you said, because I did want to go back to this real quick, because the Bucks and the Warriors did the same thing this offseason. They got cocky. They got cocky, and they didn't change too much. Boston changed. Boston went and got Brogdon. You know, Boston came into this season going, man, we were a fraction away from winning last year. We need to do everything we can to go out and win this year because this is the year to capitalize. And the fact that they could come back because on paper they should be much better than this Philly team. But the fact that they are not up 3-2 or 3-1 or I mean whatever the case may be, I'm shocked too. I'm with the city of Boston right now. I've got my jaw dropped to the floor. I hope Salil's out there just celebrating his little ass off and getting blacked out. This Philly team should not be up 3-2. I am not a Harden fan. I have not historically believed in James Harden. He had those two duds in 2 and 3, but in 1, 4, and 5, he has shown that he could be a different type of player, and maybe he's got a little dog in him.
He took 8 shots tonight, man. He was 4 for 8 tonight. I mean, really, it was a Tyrese Maxey show. He had 30, and Embiid had 33. Here's the thing, though, and we talked about this during the season with the Boston Celtics, and I think why our good friend Derek, who I hope is all right, maybe he's downing himself in a bottle of vodka. I have no idea. Here's the thing, though, that I don't like about Boston. They were 12 for 38 tonight from three. They shot 31%. Jason Tatum. Adler, I want to ask you, he was 3 for 11 from three tonight. All season long, all I heard was that this guy now granted, he did shoot 13 free throws, but dude, man, you're Jason freaking Tatum. No one on Philly can stay in front of you, man. Get to the hole, draw contact, make your free throws. I would be losing my mind if I was a Boston fan and saw that he took 11 three-pointers. That's ridiculous, man, for a guy of his caliber to be shooting that many threes. I can't believe it. The next closest guy, well, Al Horford was 0-for-7. That didn't help. He 25 minutes, 0-0-0. But if Jason Tatum wants to be this dude and wants to be the quote-unquote chosen one like that's been jammed down our throats, what, 3-for-11? Come on, man. Come on. And this team lives in – you know what they remind me of, Adler? They remind me of Mike Boonholzer's first year in Milwaukee. Live by the three, die by the three, man. There's no variance. When they shoot a high percentage – they win. When they don't, they lose. It's guaranteed almost every single time.
I think that's a fantastic point considering their regular season. What was that? They were talking about this on just various national podcasts throughout the season, but when the Celtics make their three-pointers, they're the best offense in history. When they don't, they lose half their games. And it's clearly transferred over to the playoffs. I can't believe I'm about to do this. I really can't believe this, but I am going to sit here and defend Jason Tatum for a second.
They're what? I'm sorry, say that. Can you say
I'm
going to
defend Jason Tatum here.
Yeah.
I'm going to defend the Boston Celtics and defend Jason Tatum. We want to shit on Jason Tatum for going 3 of 11 from 3. Hey, Steph went 3 of 14 last night. You think I'm going to tell Steph to stop shooting? No. You know
Steph's
what I mean?
Steph's also the greatest shooter in NBA history.
No, but he shoots well enough where you're okay with him shooting that many threes. Now, let me bring up something here real quick that I thought was interesting that kind of counteracts what you're saying, because Jason Tatum in the playoffs this year has stepped it up. He's averaging a little less points per game. He went from 30 to 26, but the steals are the same. The blocks, he's averaging twice as many blocks. He's averaging half an assist more, 2 more rebounds per game, a higher free throw percentage, pretty much the exact same 3-point percentage. He's averaging the same exact 2-point percentage. The minutes are slightly up. If anything, he has performed as well, if not better, in the postseason than he did in the regular season, which he put up, what, 38-4 per game? So this is kind of just what the playoffs are about. You know, you have a hero ball every once in a while. You have your star put up these performances where you want to really criticize them afterwards. But on a total, he's performing as he should. Now, I know there's a lot of talk about, is JB better? Is Jaylen Brown really the reason that the Celtics are going forward? And I think the only argument that you have with that is Jason Tatum was clearly gassed in the finals last year. And maybe there's something similar happening here. Maybe he hasn't quite figured out how to be, you know, the Steph who can just take over. Maybe he's watched too many Kobe highlights. Maybe he's thought that, you know, shooting 25% from the field in a game six is what he's supposed to do to be the alpha. But ultimately, Jason Tatum has come to perform in the playoffs. I do believe that.
That's fine. But can I also tell you that in his last three games, he's 7-28 from three?
Guy slump, man.
This is
a bad time to slump, but.
This is the second time. This is the second time in three games he's actually shot 3-for-11.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm defending it, but also, that goes against every fiber of my being. But honestly, I mean, he's still shooting 35% from three. It's what he shot in the regular season. He's gonna have a hot streak come sooner than later, as long as Celtics can figure out how to stay in this. I think this is more of an overall Celtics problem and not a Jason Tatum.
I agree with that. I do think Joey Maz has completely changed the way they play. There's not a lot of high screen pick and rolls, driving to the hoop. Robert Williams has been basically non-existent in a series. Now I'm going to get on my high horse here a little bit, Adler, because a quote-unquote so-called basketball expert told me how great Rob Williams was, and Rob Williams this and Rob Williams that. Yeah, where's he been this entire series, man? Where's he been? He can't even get on the floor. He's getting crushed by Embiid. Where is he? Where's he been? Should we put his face on a milk carton to try and find him? Is that what we have to do? Every Boston fan told me how great this dude was.
Look, I don't have a whole waiting. My only hope for Boston fans is you look back at Fred VanVleet in the 2019 playoffs in the conference finals against who was that? Philadelphia they played against, Milwaukee, one of those teams. Anyways, VanVleet had a terrible conference finals. I remember that was a talking point going into the finals. It was like, man, if Fred VanVleet can't step it up, they have no shot. And he goes and has his kid, has the finals of his fucking lifetime. So I guess the only hope is that this is just something that, you know, Philadelphia's game planning against Robert Williams this specific series, and that if the Celtics move on, he can bounce back. But you do look at his performance, he's averaging less minutes per game than the regular season. He's averaging less points per game during the regular season. He's averaging less rebounds per game than in the regular season. And here's my only defense. Didn't Philadelphia sign Al Horford because he was the only guy who could stop Embiid?
Yes.
So maybe it's just something where Boston is going, hey, Al Horford, Obi-Wan Kenobi, your only hope. Williams is on the bench. I don't know. I can't explain anything else at this point. I'm not super locked into Boston sports, to be fair, but they're clearly faltering as a team. I think we talked about this on the last two podcasts, plus the one that was never going to see the light of day. Joey Mazzarella is not doing the job that a playoff coach needs to do in order to make it to the finals. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to.
I think so too, man. But I do expect Boston to win game six, and we'll see what happens. I still think Boston wins this series. I'm not going to – I picked them to win the title. Like, I'm not going to back off of them now. But, yeah, man, it's – I'm surprised. I thought, like, Boston would win in five, man. Like, I am very, very surprised that we are here, especially with Embiid missing game one. Like, James Harden beats them on two last-second shots, right? And like I told you, man, he had 8 points. He had took 8 shots tonight. I mean, he was unbelievable. Maxie was unbelievable. Like,
can I throw something out here real quick?
Hey, oh, Brady,
I'm not tied into this. You know, I've got no sources within these camps. You know, I've got no inside information. But if Boston loses to Philadelphia in Game Six and they lose in the playoffs here, look for Nick Nurse to be pulled up as a potential Boston Celtic head coach. I think he would fit. Ooh, that is my prediction.
I like
Nick
that.
Nurse to the Celtics if Boston loses in this round.
Hot take, Adam.
I'm just putting it out there right now. It's just going to get put out there. And if I'm correct, I'm going to gloat about this and I'm going to post it all over social media. And if it doesn't happen, I don't remember that this happened at all. This podcast doesn't exist. And that's
doesn't just how it does not exist. But, you know, hey, I'm not trying to jinx anything here, but myself, Court Tafoya, and Ethan, I love you, Mikey, but you didn't make the playoffs. We all have – there's two more spots on the banana boat, man, for you and Derek. They're just – we're here, man. I'm going to tell you something, Adler. The drinks are unbelievable here. The beaches are fantastic. The weed is fantastic. Everything – you just kick your feet up every day, sit in the sand. I mean, it's 1-2-3 Cancun, man. It's beautiful out here.
I'm used to excellence. I piss excellence, okay? Like, that is what the Warriors do. I am not trying to go to Cancun. I'm trying to go to Cancun in fucking July, okay? Not fucking the end of
– Well, brother, man, we've got a spot for you. We've got a spot for you. All right, so let's go back to this Warriors-Lakers series. Give me kind of your prediction. What happens – so this will be released on Wednesday. This will come out Wednesday. They play Wednesday night. What are your thoughts going into that game?
Game six, Wednesday night.
Game five.
Thank you. Game five, Wednesday night is going to be the decider of the dynasty straight up. Because game five, if we don't win in game five, that discredits pretty much what we thought the Warriors were about, which is you don't give up. They put in that fight to the end. They pull shit out of their ass. They currently have had their hands on their dicks this entire playoff series, and they can't fucking figure it out. Now, if we win game five, game six and seven are anybody's ballgame. That's anybody's ballgame right there. And I am not going to be as disappointed in a game seven loss to the Lakers as I am in a game five loss in a gentleman's sweep. So I really think that this is the most pivotal game. It's at home, which just adds to the must win. I think all the pressure is on us. I saw some article come out that was like, should the Lakers rest all their starters in game five in preparation for game six? Absolutely ridiculous. But what that does show is that the fact that there is no pressure on the Lakers right now. And I don't like LeBron with no pressure up 3-1 in a playoff series. How do you overcome that?
Did you see the thing today? I think it was on ESPN. Like, should the Lakers rest their guys?
I think that was like this morning. That's insane to me, but it really does show how nonchalant the Lakers can feel right now because they really don't have any of the pressure on them. Because the Warriors, not only do the Warriors have the pressure of being down 3-1 at home, must win, weird season to begin with, Draymond punch, a lot of uncertainty. They've got the pressure of being down 3-1. They can end the jokes right now. They can come back against LeBron from a 3-1 deficit and beat him and hopefully squash 2016. Now, it'll never be squashed in my heart, but hopefully online in the memes, it won't be squashed. You know, we won't be hearing as much because if you're going to come back against down 1, you know, 3-1 against anyone, it's going to be LeBron. I'm honest. This is the most paranoid that I've been throughout the entire Steph Curry era. Outside of maybe game seven against Houston in 2018, that first half, before Houston decided to go 0-28 from three or 0-27. But this is big. This isn't, you know, if we win game five, take it 3-2, lose game six in LA, I'm okay with that. I can live with that. I think that you can justify some stuff come out of that. But if you lose game five at Chase Center to LeBron, to the seventh seed,
I know, dude. Do you know? Just to talk about the parity that's in the NBA right now, do you realize that we could right now the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference and the 7th seed in the Western Conference are both up 3-1, and we could actually have both those teams in their respective conferences finals? That's insane, dude. That's insane. That's why I kind of push back, and a lot of this will come out during the summer. This new CBA stuff, because a lot of the teams. A lot of the owners that weren't willing to spend money to go over the luxury tax were kind of complaining about it. And at the same time, man, you look around the league, you know, we talked about this in our expansion podcast, but the league is as deep as it's ever been, man. Like, this parity thing is fun. It's good for the NBA. It's good for the league. Now, maybe the ratings won't say that because I don't know how many people are going to watch Denver, Philly, or you know what I mean, or something Denver, Miami, possibly something around those lines. But I, if you would have told me a couple years ago we'd be living in a world where a seventh and an eighth seed made the conference finals, I would have been like, "You're high, dude. There's no way. There's no way."
Is this because I've been thinking about this a lot as well, and we did touch on this a little bit previously, and I can't quite figure it out. I'm confused. I'm like, who is the second gunman on the grassy knoll? Like, who really killed JFK? Like, is this years and years and years of AAU buildup of Ball Is Life mixtapes becoming available to 10, 11, 12-year-olds who can understand how to train properly? Is this the play-in tournament? Is this the salary cap rules? What is – because it wasn't like a gradual, oh, over the last 10 years, we've kind of gotten a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. No. Like, we've had super teams up until 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. And it just seems like all of a sudden this season, what was it? It was the lowest differential in points per game.
I think the Celtics. Number one seed, right?
Like, in the last, like, 40, 50 years. Something. Yeah, exactly. Celtics, exactly. So this isn't some, like, oh, we've had some gradual build to this. This just fucking happened this year out of nowhere. What, I mean, is this the plan? Is this the talent pool? Is this the way that the NIL has happened? What is going on here?
I think it could be a combination of both, man. I really, truly believe that. I mean, we could be looking at – now, these things are cyclical. I expect this to come back around, but maybe not for a while. The last super team we may have just witnessed was maybe Kyrie, KD, and Harden for a long time. I mean, you know, Miami has been doing their thing for a while. LeBron has been in L.A. for, what, 5 years now? You know, he's been there for a while. AD's been there for a while. Like, a lot of these franchises are kind of – have been locked into their rosters, at least from the superstar aspect of it. Maybe it's the Steph Curry effect, man. Truly, honestly, like, the three-point shooting is – the variables in the three-point shooting is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Like, the Miami Heat were one of the worst three-point shooting teams all season long. All of a sudden, they got hot at the right time, and boom. You know, it kind of – you're a football fan, so you'll appreciate this. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the NFL where, hey, you just get hot at the right time. Here you go. The NBA, out of all the major sports, has been super adverse to upsets like this. They don't happen very often.
It's the only league where the best season wins.
This season, a little bit last season, you could kind of, and maybe a little bit the season before that, you could kind of see it was a little bit of a trickle-down effect, and this year it just exploded. You know, the Lakers making a mid-season trade to fix their roster. Golden State battling injuries. But at the same time, you have the Kings were an unbelievable squad. Memphis was great. Denver was great. Like, it's just deep. Phoenix all of a sudden makes this KD trade. They're really good.
Talk about a super team. Super teams are not over. Look at Phoenix. Give Phoenix one offseason.
I mean, super teams from like a, hey, like, we're going to have three possible all NBA guys. That's what I'm talking about from a super team point of view. Like, I think – you're going to see a lot more of these super duper duos making all NBA teams. But I think the days, it'll come back. I mean, it's not gone forever, but I think it'll be gone for a little bit here.
Let's not forget too, KD, Kyrie, and James Harden was as recent as what, 1 year ago, a year and a half ago. I mean, the start of last season pretty much. And yeah. We're not that far removed from it.
We're not.
And so you
see the effects of that, though. Like, you know, Philly's up 3-2. It's Harden and Embiid. You know, you go to Phoenix. Phoenix is now tied. It's KD and Devin Booker. We don't need to talk about – even go look at Brooklyn. Didn't Brooklyn have the best record in the East, or weren't they number two when they had KD and Kyrie? I think KD got –
oh, they were easily one or two.
They kind of started to slide a little bit. But, like, the league is deep, man. There's a lot of really, 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 really good players. And I don't see it ending anytime soon. We got another great NBA draft coming up. Mikey, I believe the lottery is next Thursday, right? He's busy making dinner. One week from today is the NBA draft lottery. So, like, and that's supposedly another deep class. We'll have our guy Nathan Grubel on Draft Deeper to kind of explain that to us.
Love it. Shout out Nathan.
It's just a really deep, really, really deep draft. But that is going to do it for us. We'll touch on some of the other series later on. I believe Brett is going to be making his triumphant return either tomorrow or Thursday. But Adler, we'll definitely have you on. Maybe we'll do an emergency podcast Thursday just to kind of get your thoughts. Maybe do a little obituary on the Golden State Warriors. Or we could be talking about we're going back to L.A. for game six.
Jordan Poole started COVID. Get him off the team. That's all I can say.
Oh, I love you. I love you. For myself, Adler, and producer Mikey, we love you guys. Appreciate you guys listening. And we will talk to you guys soon. Peace. We'll be right back.